Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine. Today we're going to talk about reversing the damage from trauma, and we're going to do that with psychiatrist James Gordon. Based on the basic understanding that trauma will come to us sooner or later, today's special guest, Dr. Gordon, teaches us that we have the capacity to heal ourselves and how to restore hope. His book, The Transformation, represents the culmination of his 50 years as a mind-body medicine pioneer and an advocate of integrative approaches to overcoming psychological trauma and stress. It is the first comprehensive evidence-based program for reversing the psychological and biological damage caused by trauma. Dr. James Gordon is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist, former researcher at the National Institute of Mental Health, and chair of the White House Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medicine Policy. He is also the clinical professor of psychiatry and family medicine at Georgetown Medical School. He has authored or edited 10 previous books and has written often for numerous popular publications, including the New York Times and the Washington Post, as well as in professional journals. He has served as an expert for 60 Minutes, The Today Show, Good Morning America, Nightline, CNN, and MSNBC, and many others. I'm waiting for our guests to call in. Let me just tell you again, his book, the book that we're going to be discussing today, is called The Transformation. And this is about healing trauma, healing long-term trauma that has actually done damage to us. And Dr. Gordon is going to tell us how it can be reversed. So let me introduce you to my special guest. Good morning, Dr. Gordon. Welcome.
Good morning.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, hello?
Hello?
Hello? Yes. Hi. Are you there? You're there. Okay, good. All right.
I am here.
Okay, great. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being my guest today.
You're welcome.
Okay, so I read your intro, and we're talking about your book, The Transformation, Discovering Wholeness and Healing After Trauma. This book is particularly interesting to my listeners because many of them have suffered narcissistic abuse and long-term, some of them very long-term. And we know that there is damage from trauma that makes it very difficult to just pick up your life and, and start again. So why did you name your book The Transformation?
Because I see, it's a great question, because I see that what's possible in, through, and after trauma is that we can change in a way that allows us to grow, to become more wise, more intelligent, more compassionate, to discover new meaning and purpose. That trauma can open, however disabling and disheartening it may be, trauma can open the door to greater meaning, purpose, and love in our lives. So I wanted to make that clear up front in the book and to let readers know that the approach that I describe and all the techniques that I'm teaching are a means to achieve that transformation. I also wanted to make clear, or perhaps I'm simply reminding all of us, that this idea that trauma can be the doorway to profound and beneficial change is an ancient understanding that's there among indigenous people all over the world that we're just beginning to rediscover, that we need to rediscover. So that's where the title comes from. And that's based on not only the experience of indigenous people over tens of thousands of years, it's based on scientific evidence, it's based on findings from the new field of post-traumatic growth, and it's based on my own clinical experience of working with many very seriously traumatized people over the last 50 years.
So there are actual biological changes in the brain, and perhaps I'm not sure in the body. How does trauma or long-term trauma actually affect our bodies and our minds, physiologically.
Sure. I think the important thing is to understand that our initial responses to trauma are built into our biology and that they are potentially life-saving. That's what they're there for. So the second thing to understand from the get-go is that we are responding to psychological trauma as if it were a life and death physical threat that our bodies don't distinguish. So that when somebody is abusive to us, even if the abuse is psychological and not physical, we're responding as if they're threatening our life. So the first response that we have is to reach out and look for help. And when that's not there, very quickly, if that's not there, this is the kind of response that we've seen in little babies. They go kind of cry. They look around when they're threatened in some way or they're feeling imbalance and discomfort. And when nobody comes, they go into fight or flight. So the same for us. When there's no immediate rescue from the situation, we go into fight or flight. Our heart rate goes up. Our blood pressure goes up. The big muscles in our body get tense just as if we were going to fight off a violent physical threat. Our digestion is compromised because if your life is being threatened, it's not time to stop for a snack. Areas of the brain responsible for fear and anger, particularly in the amygdala, amygdala, which is a part of the emotional brain, are firing like crazy. And areas in the frontal cortex, the frontal part of our cerebral cortex, that are responsible for self-awareness, and thoughtful decision-making, and compassion, are somewhat shut down. And areas that are responsible for making it easy to connect with other people also aren't working so well. So we're in fight or flight response. The second response, the biological response that happens if fight or flight isn't adequate, isn't an adequate way to resolve the situation, if we're feeling overwhelmed and feeling like the trauma is inescapable, we go into a freeze response. And overwhelmed and inescapable is a description of what happens when, especially if you think about children who are being abused, it's quite clear they're in a situation where they're overwhelmed by the abuse and they can't get away because they're totally dependent on the people who are abusing them, assuming it's parents or guardians who are abusing them. With adults, if we're in a situation that we feel we can't leave, we may have the same kind of freeze reaction. And what happens with freeze is that we go into a kind of emotional shutdown, and we're putting out endorphins that numb us to the pain. And we're taking a kind of psychological distance from what's happening to us. It's as if people often describe when in these situations, I felt like I wasn't in my body or I was observing myself from the ceiling. Now, fight or flight is mediated by the sympathetic half of the autonomic nervous system. Autonomic really is the same word as automatic. That's the nervous system that keeps our heart functioning and our digestive system functioning and so on. The freeze response is mediated by the oldest part of the parasympathetic half of the autonomic nervous system. So those are the two basic biological responses that we have to psychological trauma. And the psychological consequences are very significant, and they flow from the biology. That is, we are fearful, we're anxious, we have trouble sleeping, we can't concentrate. Those parts of our brain aren't working so well while our heart is racing fast and our blood pressure's up. We feel withdrawn from other people, both with fight or flight and in more extreme situations with freezing. We don't feel at all connected with other people. And as these reactions go on, they're meant to be quickly turned on and quickly turned off when the life-threatening event is over. But with we humans, too often they stay on and they keep repeating themselves. And we also keep repeating in images and in flashbacks and in nightmares the traumatic events or the traumatic thoughts that have disturbed us. So the problem is not the immediate response of fight or flight or freeze. Those can be life-saving. The problem is when they continue over time, when we keep replaying the biology that we experience during traumatic events long after the events are over, or if we're in a situation where the trauma is ongoing, where it's not post-traumatic stress, it's ongoing traumatic stress. And that can come about if we're in the middle of a war zone, if we're living in a neighborhood where there's a great deal of poverty and violence, or if we're in an abusive relationship that continues.
Isn't that what's known as complex PTSD? I know that's not recognized in the DSM-5, but it's a term that is used. So is that kind of what we're talking about?
Sure, it's the same thing. I think all these terms may unnecessarily complicate the situation. The fact is that if we've been traumatized and the trauma continues, we're living in that world called complex PTSD. A lot of people are even resisting the whole. For some people, it's useful to describe what they've experienced as post-traumatic stress disorder, which means all the symptoms that I've described that are disabling us. For others, for example, for a lot of the vets I work with, they don't particularly like that description. They're perfectly willing to admit they've been traumatized and they're suffering post-traumatic stress. But defining it any further feels like objectification, complex post-traumatic stress, post-traumatic stress disorder. So, yes, I think the thing, important thing is that this is a human response. This is a normal response to abnormal situations that permeates our whole lives. And people can call it, I'm not terribly fond, as you can tell, of the term complex post-traumatic stress disorder. But if people find that helpful as a way of describing what's going on with them, that's fine. I think the important thing for us to understand is that trauma can come and will come to all of us, and that when it comes, it may create a situation that affects every aspect of our lives, or the effect may be more limited. I don't really like distinguishing among the different kinds of trauma so much. I don't think the comparisons are terribly helpful. I think it's much more important for all of us to see that what's happening to one of us could happen to any of us, to see the similarities among our responses rather than to focus on the diagnostic differences.
Okay, thanks. Thank you for explaining that. That makes sense. So you have a program, a comprehensive program, that addresses trauma-induced biological damage, and you say that the techniques are antidotes to the fight or flight, stress and freeze responses, and they can revive the functions that have been compromised, such as like memory and focus and so forth and so on. So how long have you been actually using this comprehensive program?
About 30 years now.
Wow.
I've learned the techniques in the program for myself, and everything that I describe, I've used on myself to deal with situations in my life that had been challenging and, yes, traumatic for me. So I really began 50 years ago learning and using these techniques. The comprehensive program is one that I developed with my colleagues at the Center for Mind-Body Medicine almost 30 years ago, and we've been using it and teaching it to other people for just about that long. And we've now trained about 6,000 people around the world who in turn have used this approach, the comprehensive approach that I describe in the transformation, with many hundreds of thousands of people here in the United States and in many, many places around the world.
That's fantastic. Wow, you've been doing that a long time, and it's really far-reaching. So what I thought was interesting is that it's not only just learning new patterns, but it is also about growing new tissue in our brains, because especially with children who are exposed to prolonged trauma, I know that it can change the brain physiologically and sort of not permanently, but it can alter it. So how exactly is your program helping people to regrow brain tissue?
It's a great question. Let me start with two techniques. The first one primarily addresses prolonged fight or flight response, and the second primarily addresses the freezing response, although both techniques can be useful for both responses. So the first technique, and then we can talk some more about the other techniques, all of which address the changes that come about in the brain and the rest of our body through psychological trauma. So the first technique that I teach right at the beginning of the transformation is slow, deep, soft belly breathing. Breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth, with the belly soft and relaxed. Perhaps focusing on the breath coming in through the nose and leaving through the mouth. On the word soft as we breathe in and belly as we breathe out. And I'm encouraging people who are listening to us to do it as they're listening. And feeling your belly being soft and relaxed. As we do this, what we're doing is we're mobilizing the vagus nerve. That's V-A-G-U-S. Vagus means wandering. And this big nerve, which wanders up from our belly through our chest, back to the central nervous system, to the brain, is the antidote to the fight or flight response. Slows heart rate, lowers blood pressure, relaxes the big muscles in our body that are tense when we're in fight or flight. It quiets activity in the amygdala, the part of the brain responsible for fear and anger, increases activity in the frontal part of our cerebral cortex, makes it easier to focus, to be self-aware, to be compassionate, and also helps us by activating the vagus nerve, which connects with other nerves responsible for speech and facial expression, makes it easier to tune into other people, to their facial expression, to their voice, to connect with them and to get support from them. So breathing slowly and deeply like this balances the fight or flight response, helps us restore the functioning in the brain and in the whole body that's been disrupted by fight or flight, and helps to build new brain tissue. And there's ample evidence, which I cite in the transformation, many studies that have been done, that techniques like this concentrated meditation, soft belly breathing, or mindfulness meditation, just becoming aware of thoughts, feelings, and sensations as they arise, that those techniques help to rebuild tissue in the hippocampus, which is a part of the emotional brain responsible for dealing with stress, mediating stress, and for memory. Helps rebuild tissue in the frontal part of our cerebral cortex and those areas responsible for compassion and self-awareness and decision-making, and decreases activity and decreases the size of the amygdala, the part of the emotional brain responsible for fear and anger. So this very, very simple technique creates a biological rebalancing and rebuilding that supports all our trauma recovery efforts. The second technique that I teach pretty early on in the transformation is an expressive meditation. And expressive meditations are the oldest forms of meditation on the planet. They're used by all of our ancestors and are still used by indigenous people all over the world, and we can use them as well. And these are techniques that work with the body, that break up the fixed patterns that occur during the freeze response, that kind of shutting down, that closing in of the body, or the collapse that sometimes happens to us when we're overwhelmed. The repetitive thoughts that keep coming to us when we've been overwhelmed by trauma, and the isolation that comes when we're frozen. And simple, these are simple techniques, these expressive meditations. The first one I teach, and the scripts for all of these are there in detail, the evidence for the utility of these techniques is there in the transformation, is shaking and then afterwards dancing, moving the body. So shaking, all you need to do is stand up and bend your knees and start shaking from your feet up through your knees and hips and chest and shoulders and head, letting the shaking overtake your whole body. It's good to have some fast rhythmic music on it to encourage that process of shaking. Good to close your eyes too, shuts out distractions. And do that for 5 minutes or 7 minutes and just see what happens. And often what happens is people feel more relaxed, they feel more energized, emotions that have been repressed and suppressed and just shut down begin to emerge. And take a couple of minutes just to relax and be aware of what's happening in your body and with your breathing. And then let yourself dance to music that's inspiring and uplifting and energizing for you. So this whole expressive meditation takes about 15 minutes. Again, the whole script for it is there in the transformation. You can create your own playlist for this. You can watch me doing this and teaching other people on the Center for Mind-Body Medicine website, cmbm.org. And what happens when you do this is afterwards people feel that the trauma, which has been shutting them down, has been like has had a stranglehold on them and been crushing them and depleting them, that just begins to loosen its hold, and we feel a little more energized, a little freer, a little more capable of accessing our feelings and using our imagination and expressing ourselves. So this is the beginning of addressing the biological damage that trauma does. And all the other techniques that I teach in the transformation also address this biological damage and help to restore functioning in our brain and our whole body. So, for example, walking in nature seems like such a simple thing. It's something that many of us, certainly when I was going through a really rough period of my life, long before I'd thought about any of this, is when I was still in medical school, I'd spontaneously like to walk in a park or walk by a river. But somehow I knew that being in nature calmed me down and allowed me to feel more comfortable and a bit freer and a little more hopeful. We have research now. Research has been done at Stanford showing that walking in nature decreases activity in a region of the brain called the subgenual cortex. Name is not important, but it's a region of the brain that's responsible for repetitive thinking, for rumination, repetitive thinking about traumatic and distressful events. Just spending time in nature reduces activity in that part of the brain, and so on for all the techniques, guided imagery, nutrition, gratitude, forgiveness, spending time with animals, laughing, all of these help to restore functioning in our brain that's been damaged by trauma.
It's so easy. Also, in your book, you talk about autogenics and ABT and using biodots. I thought that was really interesting. Can you explain for us exactly what this process is and how the biodots are used?
Sure. One thing I want to say is these techniques, I would say they're simple. They're all sort of almost humorously simple. They're not always easy, especially when we're overwhelmed. We have to sometimes overcome our own resistance. So let's assert they're simple, but if you're having trouble doing them, be patient with yourself. Bring that compassion to yourself, because you may find them easy, but some people may find some of them hard, and that's okay. Don't worry about it. Just keep working with it, see what happens. After a while, they will likely come more easily. The other thing I want to emphasize is that I'm teaching many, many different techniques. And if one of them is not easy for you in the beginning, you may want to look at another. Now, the one that you're mentioning, autogenic training and biofeedback, for me, was not easy to begin with. I kind of resisted. A colleague of mine actually taught me this around 30 years ago. And she happened to be a very skilled practitioner of biofeedback. And I thought, oh, it's kind of mechanical. You know, why do we have to use a biodot or a thermistor? But now I really appreciate it, and I love it. It took me a while, but I came around to it. So what it is it's a combination of two approaches. One is called autogenic training, and the other is biofeedback. Autogenic training, simply, these are Greek words for being able to do something for ourself. Auto refers to ourself, and genic refers to action or doing. So genic, actually, now that I think about it, maybe genic is Latin rather than Greek. Anyway, forgive me for that. I think it's Latin. Genic is Latin. Auto probably comes from the Greek and also is there in Latin. Anyway. It means that we can do something for ourselves. And these are phrases that mobilize the parasympathetic nervous system, the same nervous system that we mobilize when we do soft belly breathing. This is a more focused way of mobilizing that system to create balance to the fight or flight response. And these phrases were created almost 100 years ago by a German neurologist named Schultz. And he was borrowing from what he had, as best I can tell, from what he had heard about what Indian yogis were able to do. The yogis were able to control their breathing, control their blood pressure, and raise and lower the temperature in their body. This is something that they had practiced and studied for many, many years. And Schultz got the idea, well, if they can learn this, maybe I can use phrases to help Westerners learn much more quickly how to control these autonomic or automatic functions. And so he came up with a series of six phrases that are designed to use our brain's capacity to use images to control our autonomic nervous system. That hard wiring is there in the brain. So we can create an image in our brain. We can use words to create an image, which in turn can affect the autonomic nervous system and functions of the autonomic nervous system, like the regulation of temperature. We have that capacity in us. And autogenic phrases mobilize the capacity. So, for example, the first autogenic phrase is, "My arms are warm and heavy. I am at peace." So as we say this to ourselves, we're creating, our words are creating an image of arms being warm and heavy, which means they have more blood in them. And as more blood flows into the arms and hands, they get warmer. And then "I am at peace." Now, biofeedback is a science that's much more recent, really dating back to the 1960s, that says or has discovered that we have the capacity to use signals that come to our senses to control these very same autonomic functions. And when we use a bio dot, which is a temperature sensitive dot, and we put that on our hand and measure our temperature, we're able to look at that dot and use that signal, that awareness of the color of the dot, to control the temperature in our hand. We're using feedback, we're using our visual understanding of the color of that dot to control the temperature in our hand, which in turn determines the color of the dot. Now, when you put autogenics and biofeedback together, you're encouraging the use of biofeedback by using these phrases that help the hands to get warm. So what we do with autogenic training is we put a little dot, temperature-sensitive dot, on our hands between our thumb and index finger on the back of our hand, on the muscle there, and we look at the color, and if we're tense, the color, the temperature is low. Remember, when we're in fight or flight, the blood goes to the big muscles, and say in the arms and the legs, and flows away from the hands, and our hands, as most of us know, get kind of cold and clammy. So if we're tense or even just a little anxious, that the hand is cold, the color is brown or yellow, we look at it, we close our eyes, we say the autogenic phrases, and there are six autogenic phrases, and we repeat them to ourselves, six times. Then we open our eyes and we look at the dot and see what color is. And very, very often, the dot has changed color from brown or yellow to green or blue or purple, which means our hands have warmed, and along with warming our hands, we feel more relaxed and more at peace. So this is a combination of autogenic training and biofeedback. It's a beautiful way to create relaxation, to be an antidote to the fight or flight response. And people who like concrete proof that they're doing something, not just their own idea that it feels better, but concrete proof that they're actually able to affect their physical functioning, which is many, many people, and kind of all of us like it to some degree, we're impressed. Oh, we have the capacity to do that. And incidentally, kids love this because it's playful. It's fun to do this. And the more we can get into that kind of playful mode, the more able we're going to be to do this. It's a very, very effective means for lowering our level of stress. It's something that most Americans have never heard of. The research on autogenic training, for example, there are thousands of research papers in the scientific literature in Europe and many in Asia as well, and very, very few in the United States. But it's a very effective way, and combining autogenics with biofeedback, which was first done by researchers at the Menninger Clinic, Elmer and Elise Green at the Menninger Clinic, which was then in Kansas, is really very, very impressive. So I'm glad you mentioned it. Not too many people know about it, and I teach it in detail in the transformation because I think it's so valuable, especially for those of us who are skeptical about the idea that we can make a difference in how we feel. And that we really have the capacity to change our biology. This shows us in a way that's very, very clear that we all have this capacity.
It sounds really, really cool. I definitely want to give that a try because, you know, you're right. It's really interesting to have that evidence that you're actually doing it. We're coming down to the end of the show. I wanted to ask you, so you actually do this program. Do you go and do seminars? Do you do them virtually? How do you actually do this program, or are you one-on-one with individuals?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that, excuse me, people who read the transformation, the whole program is in there. The whole comprehensive program is there, and you can learn it on your own.
Okay.
That's why I wrote the book, and people who are already using it are telling me that it works to use on your own. And it can go together with whatever other approaches you may be using to deal with trauma or stress. So that's the first thing. You can use it on your own. When I teach it, the way I use it in all those situations that you describe. I use it with people one-on-one in my office. The program that's in the transformation is the basis for the training we have done now of well over 6,000 people around the world, not only health and mental health professionals, but teachers and community leaders and clergy and peer counselors and leaders of women's groups and people who just want to use this approach and teach it to others. So we teach it in training programs that are described in detail on the Center for Mind-Body Medicine website, cmbm.org. So if people want to learn it to teach it to others, that would be the best way to do it. We have a 2, 4, or 5-day training programs, and then we provide supervision as you use it with other people. If you want to use it, if the focus is really on using it for yourself, then you can join and want to be part of a group. We have mind-body skills groups at many places around the country. You can look at the CNBM website to find out practitioners whom we've trained and certified who are in your area. We also have online groups, which are led by our faculty, for people who would like to learn these techniques online. And these are groups where you can see each other. I think we're using Zoom now as a technology so people can see each other, groups of 8 or 10 people where you're learning all these techniques, not all the techniques that are in transformation, but a number of them, and you're sharing your experience with other people. I want to say that even if you're this comprehensive approach on your own and the transformation, which you can do, is always good to connect with other people, to share your experience with other people. This connection with others can be a major factor in healing trauma for all of us. So the opportunities are there for everyone to use this approach. And I wrote the book. The previous book I wrote was on depression. And people said to me, well, this is interesting, and many of these techniques are useful, but I'm not depressed. Why don't you write a book for everyone, for me too, for all of us? And so what I recognized is that sooner or later, trauma is going to come to all of us. And so I wrote the book so that people can use this approach on their own, that this is possible. I mean, people say, I don't have money to see a therapist, or there's nobody near me, or I'm very fearful of talking with anyone else. You can use this approach on your own, and you can combine it with other approaches that you're using, either the approach that we're using at the Center for Mind-Body Medicine, which is a small group approach that's available to you, or you combine it with other therapies that you're presently using or want to use. I just want to add that toward the at the end of the book, in the appendix, I describe a whole variety of other therapeutic approaches which can be used together with the approach and the transformation. And I give readers my estimate of what I think about these approaches and the evidence that that supports their use as well. And all of them are ones that can be used in combination with this approach.
Perfect. Okay. so we can do this ourselves. That's always amazing. And this is a wonderful book. So we're talking about the transformation, discovering wholeness and healing after trauma. And I think we could all use to have a copy of this book on our shelf to learn and for reference. So I guess it's available in pretty much all outlets like Amazon and Barnes & Noble and those kind of places, right?
Exactly. It's available. Okay. It's available everywhere. And, people read it and have comments about it. I'd love to hear it. If you read it and like it, please review it. I welcome those reviews.
Perfect. Okay. Well, thank you for being with us today and sharing this amazing information that I know will benefit all my listeners. And I just really appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Randy. Bye-bye.
Okay. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye. So we are out of time. But if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. That's RANDIFINE.com. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.